tweet at Today SOR.
Rick Stein is known for his TV shows that bring him all over the world and for his restaurants in Padstow and Cornwall showcasing the best of local seafood. But he acknowledges a debt to another European cuisine, one that he has loved for many years. And his new book and the accompanying TV series is called Rick Stein's Secret France. Rick, good morning to you. You're welcome.
Good morning,
to Dublin.
Sean.
Thank you for coming to studio.
Tell nice me about to be
you.
Here.
Tell me about you in France. You went there first, I think, as a teenager.
Well, I did. I was very lucky. At the time, I was a teenager and a bit bolshy. My parents sent me off to a chateau with my sister Henrietta in northern France. And they were friends of my dad's, or business friends of my dad's, associates is the word, isn't it? It was a massive estate growing sugar beet, petit pois, and colza, which is rapeseed, and haricot vert. And we lived in a chateau. We stayed in a chateau. We had the chateau had full staff and a butler. And Henrietta and I had breakfast, lunch and dinner together. Sometimes the family were there, sometimes not. But if they weren't there, there was just Henrietta and I in this vast, wonderful sort of Baroque dining room with a butler serving us. And we had the most wonderful fillet steaks and beautiful cherries and creme fraiche, which I'd never tasted before. Rabbit curries from the rabbits kept in hutches in the back. And cider, dry cider. And I was 14 at the time. As much as I liked, poured to me by the butler in his white gloves.
What a way to be introduced to French cuisine. It's no wonder you've fallen in love with it, and it's an enduring love affair, so to speak. Now, you say in the introduction to your book that it's one of life's great pleasures to travel hopefully.
Well, it is. I think that's the whole point of this series, because one of the questions I'm asking, which I'm sure, Sean, you would agree to, is has French cuisine lost its way? Because I think a lot of us now going to France find it harder and harder to find good restaurants. And so the travelling hopefully is that we decided, David Pritchard, the director, and I decided just to sort of do a journey without maps. And David himself, when we were talking about the programme, he said, well, where shall we go? I said. And he said, well, let's just think of the mark of Zorro. We'll just go z-z-z-z in the air and make a map of it. So that's what we did, really. We travelled, hopefully, and in fact did find some really nice restaurants.
So rumours of the demise of French cuisine, they're greatly exaggerated, to borrow a phrase.
Well, I think it's like a lot of European countries. You have to do some research. I mean, I wrote a book about Spain about 10 years ago. And if you go to Spain, you don't always get good food. You have to look for it. And when you find it, it's really, really good. And it's the same
in France. Certainly along the seafronts, I mean, they specialise in murdering vegetables that are frozen already.
And
you just get them quite soggy. But I mean, if you poke them out, you get a lot of very good places as well.
Yeah.
Now, you have beautiful pictures of market displays throughout the book. And I know people say to you that they don't see the produce in the markets reproduced in restaurants. Or is that true?
No, I think it is true. I've sort of made this distinction between maybe French and maybe Italian cuisine. The French restaurants came after the French Revolution, I think. I mean, I've read lots of suggestions that is the case, that when all those chefs were thrown out of the big houses and their bosses were guillotined, they opened restaurants and specialised in the food that they were used to cooking, which was very high protein, lots of meat, lots of fish food, and they just carried on in that way with the restaurants. Whereas if you go to Italy, the restaurants are just local restaurants selling local fruit, local vegetables, a bit of meat, bit of fish. So I do think the French restaurants are a bit protein heavy, but the markets are sensational. And wherever possible in the TV series, we've gone into people's houses and tried vegetable dishes.
If people want to replicate these recipes here, I mean, if we can't get the ripe cherries or the really good apricots or the best of chicory or the range of mushrooms that you get in France. So, I mean, what do we do?
Well, actually, I do think the supermarkets here are so much better than they used to be. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the gap is narrowing all the time. And then, of course, you've got great farmers markets here. I remember it was a long time ago, but going to the farmers market in Middleton, just saying this is the best farmers market I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just getting better and better, but there's still a gap. And I think it's really to do with the fact that the French are great producers. They've got great knowledge, and also they pass on their knowledge to their customers. I mean, you always, you know, speak a bit of French and they'll give you a tip on how to do this, that, mm-hmm. or the other with whatever it is.
Yeah, let's just look at some of the detail from the book now. Truffle oil, it's not the same as the real thing. Tell me more.
Well, it's interesting because in the book, it's there. Unfortunately, the bit in the TV series got cut because you have to cut great things. But we went to see this truffle grower. Well, actually, he has dogs to find the truffles, but he actually produces truffle-infused oaks, which he sells all over the world. And really, it's largely down to him that places like New Zealand, Australia now grow black truffles. But he said that actually truffle oil has got nothing to do with truffles. It's a chemically manufactured taste, which is really, I think, why that even hamburger chains now do truffle chips. It's not truffle at all.
It's all a big fraud, but one that can be quite tasty.
Well, I think it is tasty, but I don't think you should call it truffle oil.
Yeah, and Comté cheese, hugely popular, but you found one particular place where it's matured in a military fort.
Well, it was just in the French Comté in the Jura region of France, where they'd taken over this old fort, which was dug mostly into the ground, and therefore perfect temperature for maturing cheeses. And Comté is probably my favourite cheese and the most popular cheese in France. And it's one of those cheeses that's great for putting in, grated into dishes. And I just love it. And some of the cheeses there is like year old, you know, and they love their mature Comté as much as they love their young Comté, which has got a lovely sort of acidic freshness.
Yeah, something else is there. You mentioned a ham and charred terrine as indicative of the small producers still making the best stuff. Now, were you able to make your own version of what you ate there?
Certainly. I mean, you can get
charred. Charred grows. I mean, I think I have some in my back garden in a pot. It's a question of trying to not grow it as try to grow it nearly.
Well, that's true. It is one of those things you just get a bit fed up with because it just keeps growing all over the place. But that's the thing. There's most of the ingredients, bar a couple in the book, you can get in here. I mean, the one thing I think is hard to get is a type of hot red pepper, like pimenton in Spain, called Piment d'Espelette, which is very popular in Provence, but more so in Roussillon, down by the coast there. But generally, everything in the book, perhaps a few wild mushrooms are harder to get here. But, you know, our supermarkets have come on. One of the things I'm pointing out in this series and in the book is it not so much that the French cuisine has gone downhill, it's cooking in this country has gone uphill. That if you think about the 70s to now, what we've all learnt about food and produce is just gone berserk, you know?
We've all got higher standards and more sophisticated palates and so forth. Now, do you have a top recipe? Or what's your top recipe for a really good quality chicken?
Well, I do like, top quality, I've called poulet de Brest, but a top quality free-range chicken with morels. And I actually find the morels, the dried ones that you can get in good supermarkets perfectly easily. It's just this wonderful sauté of chicken with a cream sauce and lots of chicken stock in it and the flavours of morels. It's one of those, and some sort of wine. I mean, my favourite wine to make that dish is from Jura. It's a sort of slightly oxidised wine, tasting a bit like sherry. Mm-hmm. But I just love that dish. It's classic French.
Beef and Burgundy, you say the two go hand in hand?
Well, I think so. I mean, in the series, I think it's this tonight on BBC that I go and have a steak frites in
the Charolles. Is this clashing with the big debate by any chance? What time is it on BBC Two?
It's at 9 o'clock.
Okay, so just after the debate then.
Oh, we might get a few viewers then.
Yeah. So not forgetting the desserts either. You say the French still rule the roost when it comes to desserts, both simple and elaborate.
Well, I think we you know, British Irish desserts are just as good, but they're different. But I do think that the French desserts haven't really gone down in any way. And in the book, I've got some very simple tarts, but I've also got one or two quite elaborate desserts. There's a particularly lovely dish from a restaurant called the Column d'Or, just near Nice, which I'm particularly fond of, which is like Mm-hmm. It's frozen. It's a frozen meringue with lots of raspberries in it, which does take a bit of time.
Yeah, I mentioned that there are 120 delicious new recipes for real French home cooking. That's what it tells on the cover. But I mean, there's cooking and there's cooking. And, you know, are the recipes here for people who are just taking their first steps? Maybe they just want to experiment a little bit or try new things, and they wouldn't really be considering themselves too qualified, too well qualified.
No, Sean, because I mean, I haven't ever written a book like, you know, 15-minute recipes or six ingredients or three ingredients or whatever. But I am aware that people have got less and less time cooking. So a lot of the recipes in there are very simple and straightforward. I don't do difficult anyway. I'm not mm-hmm. that sort of a cook.
Right.
I would say my favourite recipe in the whole book, though, is what I call duck cottage pie, right? In French, it's called confit de canard.
Okay, tell me a little more about duck cottage pie. I mean, yeah, cottage pie is fairly straightforward. Yeah, so duck cottage pie?
Yeah. Well, it's basically confit de duck, which is like slow-cooked duck in duck fat, which you can buy in tins in supermarkets now. Mm. That is the meat, but then you cook that with a little bit of red wine, preferably French red Burgundy, but not necessarily, and a bit of garlic, lots of parsley. That's your sort of your mince, mm-hmm. okay? Then you've got quite a lean mashed potato just made with milk, because what you put on top of that is loads of Conte cheese, right? And I don't know why, but that combination, it just tastes like the best cottage pie you've ever tried.
Well, now there's an encouragement if we were looking for one. Now, and you mentioned him earlier. I know the series, or the idea for this series, came from your friend and director David Pritchard, who sadly died earlier this year. I get a sense that he loved his work, but he also looked forward to a glass of something at the end of a hard working day.
He so did. I mean, we miss him dreadfully. I mean, it was his idea to do this French sort of odyssey, the secret France. I think really it was him remembering earlier times in his life when, like me, we went off touring France looking for those little restaurants mm-hmm. that this series is all about. But the one thing I did realise about David was that at the end of a day's filming, he always used to say, we have to finish by 5:29, right? We've got to finish filming if we're not filming the evening. And none of us could really figure out why. And I suddenly realised, well, actually, when we were at his memorial service and some of his early colleagues were there, and they remembered in Newcastle when the first news came on at 5:30. And this was in the days when all the news clips were done in film. And you had to finish cutting your film and editing it by 5:29. By the time he'd done that, it was off to the pub.
I see. As I predicted to you during the break before we started this conversation, a lot of people are texting in. Hi, Sean. I used to live in a tiny village in Hemmerdon in Devon, and Rick used to call into the local, the Miner's Arms, occasionally. A real gentleman. He never played the celebrity card that Finn Fiona.
I've got to cut in here. Do you know, Sean, tonight, all the crew are in the Miner's Arms to watch the programme, and I'm in Dublin.
And another one, this is Stephen and Finglas saying, of all the TV chefs, I find Rick hard to beat. Over 30 years of great television, many thanks to you. And
Sure
that reflects a lot of the a lot of the feelings that people are getting around the country and listening to you. Let's just see if we can take one more of these. Ask Rick about his cookery school in Padstow, a bucket list must. My three sons and I went to the school the year Porrick Harrington first won the Open, and it was a fabulous and memorable experience. Beautiful village with great restaurants and accommodation, mostly owned by Rick Steen. That's from Richard Hoare in Dublin. So you're still running those cookery school
sessions?
Yeah,
no, they're very popular. It's just because we, you know, like the coast of Ireland, we've got such great fish. And I think a lot of people aren't really used to working with perfectly fresh fish. So they're just completely bowled over by the experience, actually. So, it's doing really well. And I would like to add that you can fly from Dublin to about 20 minutes from Padstow to Newquay.
Well, now there's encouragement again. If you were to be told, look, you know, you can have one last meal, what would it be?
I think it'd have to be turbot, Sean, to be honest, because I just love that fish, and it's such a sort of specific fish to our neck of the woods. A turbot with hollandaise sauce, just a few boiled new potatoes and a bit of spinach. I'd be happy with that.
And for starters?
I think I'd probably like some Dublin Bay prawns, some langoustines, you know, that would be perfect. Again, hollandaise, but I love them with mayonnaise, but a mustard mayonnaise, you know. I mean, those prawns, my wife's Australian, but I think she prefers them to Aussie prawns, to be honest.
Okay, well, look, on that positive note, I don't think they're actually harvested in Dublin Bay. They come from elsewhere.
They're mostly from, for the East Coast.
It's just we call them that.
I know, but originally they did. And they're still in the Irish Sea because we get them in Cornwall as well.
Well, look, it's been great having you in studio, Rick Stein. The book is called Rick Stein's Secret France, 120 Delicious New Recipes for Real French Home Cooking. And you are on your way now to Dubray Books in Grafton Street, where you're signing copies at 1 o'clock.
What fun.
Enjoy your time here, Rick Stein. Thank you so much
indeed. Cheers, Sean.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.